Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have one of my favorite guests, and he knows he is. I haven't seen him in a few years, but he'll probably tell us why, I hope. His new film, Hawk and Rev, is available. Vampire Slayers, I guess I should give the full title. And I'll even tell you guys where to find it. Usually I make it stay to the end, but he'll tell you where you find your other good films. Amazon Prime is where I saw it. I don't know. And in Canada. Good work. You got it on the Canadian Prime, which I don't always get. So Canadian listeners, which I know is lots of you because I am Canadian, you can get it on Canadian Prime, which makes me happy because most of these Americans don't understand where Canada is. Welcome back, Ryan Barton Grimley.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Go ahead. Sorry.
What have you been up to? You didn't even send me this film. I had to randomly discover it on Twitter.
I mean, so I'd already done some shooting of this film when I first met you and was publicizing Elijah's Ashes.
Which oh, really?
Was at, yeah. I'd already done the first shoot of this thing. It took me four more pickup shoots to finish this thing.
So. Okay, let's start. I want to go right there. What four pickup shots? Where are they? It's
oh
not
my
the
God.
Beach scenes.
Oh, dude. Yeah. So, I mean, you can tell, like, in those beach scenes, Ari Schneider, who plays Rev,
right.
and myself, who plays Hawk, you know, we both had definitely eaten, quite a bit of extra holiday food there, I would say. Maybe, like, 50 helpings. As you know from interviewing me about Elijah's Ashes and Repatriation, my earlier films, I make low budget movies, man, and they're made on a shoestring. I make them with my friends and my family and people I do improv theater with and people that I love. And so it takes a little, extra time to get done. And so the end of our first 14-day shoot, so this is, about, I don't know, a fifth of what most features shoot for, right? Even if they're independent. We just had a 14-day shoot. We were supposed to go 17 days and shoot our big ending, and we got shot down at that big warehouse location, which quite a lot of the movie takes place at. And clearly the neighbors did not want us to be shooting action scenes in the parking lot next to all of their apartment windows at 3 a.m, which I get.
don't know why.
Which I totally understand. So it was like a blessing in disguise. Like we shut down without an ending and kind of rewrote the location and changed it to the Sam Emerson water filtration plant, which was a nod to Lost Boys, right? And Corey's character in that. So we ended up shooting that whole, giant buffet of gore at this, spooky exterior location up in the mountains outside of L.A., instead of at this warehouse, and we had built a whole other water treatment facility set in there and all this crazy business got the shaft, man, got kicked right on out of there. But it ended up, I don't know. It just ended up being better. We shot so much more gore because of it. Cause I was like, you know what? I got a mulligan, here, I'm just going to double down. I'm going to add some extra characters. I'm going to bring Terry back in there. And Terry is this homeless accountant character played by Kevin Ocampo, one of my favorite actors in the world. Just so funny. Just so much blood coming out of all of his limbs in that ending scene. And so we did that. We shot some beach locations. We went out to festivals. We could not get a premiere. I went and shot that whole extra features thing at the end, right, with the outtakes that kind of reveal all these different people who played the Gimp in our movie. We have a Gimp. And it was a bunch of friends and family. So not everybody was always available for these, like, late night shoots. So a lot of people played this Gimp. But really, the real secret is Ari Schneider, who played Rev, played the Gimp in probably 75% of the good scenes where he's actually on camera. But, you know, I played him, Audrey Haworth, the production designer, Sean Ayers, the cinematographer, a blow-up doll I got off of Amazon played the Gimp in some scenes. So, you know, we were just trying to really refine the edit and get that weird tone of Hawk and Rev Vampire Slayers. So it took a while, you know.
Got a lot of questions. Hold on. Let's back this up. The Gimp ends the credit scene. People, just so you know, you need to stay for it. You literally have to stay for the end credit scene. Nothing against the film. I was crying during the end credit scene, especially the part where they go, who's the cinematographer? Well, who's shooting this? I was dying because it was already funny before that, and it got even funnier then. I'm like, this is brilliant. I was like, why?
That's awesome,
he must have knew this was coming ahead of time, and you were throwing this in because it was just, you're saying you're an improv guy, so it must have occurred to you, you know what? I got to do this.
Well, I was like, because, you know, the movie's kind of campy and sort of bad on purpose in a lot of it, and we're having a lot of fun. Like, one of my favorite movies, Wolf Cop. Right?
Yes.
Canadian buffet of horror comedy. Just love that movie. I love part two as well, but I think number one is just brilliant. And there's just something about it. Like we almost looked at the camera a couple times on purpose. It's very purposeful in the movie where we break the fourth wall. But I was like, dude, we should just totally have fun with this. And because we're on such a shoestring, we didn't have any extra bodies to shoot behind the scenes and shoot outtakes. So when we needed to do some extra stuff and, you know, some extra murder and gore, you know, I figured, why the hell not do this whole thing? We had an extra 4 hours and this person donated a green screen. So I was like, screw it, dude, we're going to go to town and make it seem like this entire movie was shot in front of a green screen, break the fourth wall, and then make it even weirder and make it like disjointed that Hawk and Rev are actors now in the movie. And it just like blow it out, like go to full absurdity. Just for the hell of it. Cause to be honest, I didn't know if anyone would ever let me make another movie. So,
you know, we're going to get there near the end, but I'm going to bring up that question again. Let's get into the movie now. So why this time vampires? So you're telling me you shot this Why Elijah's Ashes and your first one was done. So you already had this idea in mind while you were doing it. So you were pretty much almost done then.
Yeah. So this Hawk and Rev Vampire Slayers which is a horror comedy, super campy 80s homage kind of deal. It was based on a much more serious script that was about like a post 9/11 script I'd written a really long time ago. That was a play about the security guard who misidentified some people who he thought were part of a terrorist cell. And it kind of made fun of this, you know, this kind of law and order numbskull misidentifying kind of racial stereotypes in the post 9/11 world. And not realizing that he actually was, unbeknownst to him, part of this kind of homegrown thing happening. And so when I could not get any money for that, I was like, screw it. I'm just going to make, what I really want to make, which is something that makes fun of all of the 80s horror that I love. You know, Lost Boys and just all the vampire movies that I love. Vampires are also like, they're very creepy because they're sort of, you know, humanoid. They're fun to shoot on low budget movies because you can play with all the fake blood and it's not super crazy. You don't need a ton of CGI or, you know, massive mass or monster stuff. So I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to rewrite this script. I got to shoot something because I, you know, from finishing Elijah's Ashes and Repatriation and getting it out on the festival circuit, people were like, hey, man, what are you going to do next? I'd love to, you know, give you $50 or something, that kind of thing. So I was like, oh, I should probably write something funny because no one wanted to really make anything serious. Like, it was really hard to get creation out there, which is an awesome drama, but you know, TV dramas are kind of sucking the air out of that room. And one thing I can do is comedy, and I love horror, but my favorite kind of horror is campy and kind of silly. Like, I love fun, dumb characters who are thrown into horror. That's my favorite thing. Like, I don't like the navel-gazing, super serious, really extra dark stuff. Like, to me, whenever I watch that, I'm like, oh my God, this would be so much better if that character just had a moment of, like, self-realization there at how, you know, stupid they are right now. And so that's kind of what I tried to bring to this really serious script, and kind of rewrote it and then showed it to my brother-in-law, Ari, who plays Rev. And he was like, I don't know, man, this tone is so campy. I'm not sure people will get it. And I was like, well, let's do a read through some of the people we know that maybe we could cast. So we did that a couple times, and then I rewrote some of the dialogue. And then, I mean, it just seemed super duper fun. And like, you know, Sean Ayers, who did camera, was just like, I'm in, man. I'll show up wherever, whenever. The production designer and art director, Audrey and David, they were like, let's do it. We want to play with blood. So I was like, this is perfect. Cause I love the 80s cheese, man. and I also, like, there's just no comedy coming out. Like, there are not a lot of comedy movies coming out. And that's brutal for me because I've just done like a decade of improv behind me, you know? And it's like one of my favorite things. And you can say so much about so many things and get it through to people with a joke, you know? And so that's kind of the rabbit hole we went down. And, you know, it took like, it's about 4 years now since the first shoot, you know, which is wild.
It is. Now, I do have my notes. I have to ask, how much do you like Lost Boys? Is that like your 80s go-to movie?
I love Lost Boys a lot, dude. I mean, that thing, I watched that one summer on VHS probably 100 times with my neighbors.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we really started trying to impersonate the Frog Brothers. You know, we were like 12-year-old kids in camo walking around with BB guns and stakes and stuff like that. And we were like terrorizing my hometown of 13,000 people in California. We never found a vampire. We definitely threatened a few people with stakes and whatnot, and they laughed at us and called our parents. But, you know, I was a big fan. Big fan. Okay.
You start this movie off with a great theme song. I think it just sets the tone for this film. Was that always the plan with this theme song, or you just came to you?
It was, well, I mean, the music. So Ari Schneider plays Rev, and his childhood friend, Robbie Elfman, who have both done music for Repatriation and Elijah's Ashes. They did the music here as well. And we licensed a bunch of stuff too. But, you know, I was really worried about the tone. Like, I was like, I don't know how that, because immediately once we started shooting, like, I could see it had this weird mix of like deadpan and campy. And I was like, oh, man, plus with the horror, and we got to get people to be kind of scared as well, like, because they've got to actually believe that there's a threat, because that just makes Hawk and Rev's stupidity in the face of danger so much funnier, especially to me as the director. So we worked really hard on the cuts. We did some tests with the audiences. We did all this stuff. Could not get the score right for that particular part. And Ari was like, dude, just let us write a theme song. It will be the dumbest, corniest thing. And it will be like 80s and ridiculous, but perfect. And I was like, give it a shot. I mean, they did like a scratch track in like one sitting, and I emailed it to me, and I threw it over, and I was like, I think this is just perfect. It's mm-hmm. so corny. And like perfectly late 80s. Like, it's not like too metal. It's like kind of pretend metal or corny, glammy kind of stuff. And I was like, this is great. The lyrics don't even make sense. I was like, I love this thing. And then we play it over the end credits, and it just, I think it's so fun, dude. They hit it out of the park in the music. I mean, there's some Beyonce like ripoff tracks and some of the slow-mo like gearing up scenes that are so funny. Because as a director, I kept thinking of like scoring it sort of from the perspective of Hawk. And his character is like pretty metal and kind of gruff. And it was just way too serious. It needed to make fun of Hawk. And so that's kind of what we discovered and really went down that road. And I think it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite aspects of the movie.
Okay. This question I didn't write down, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Is Hawk more you, or is the character from Eliza's Ashes more you?
Honestly, dude, Rev is more me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like a big time old school martial artist, like pacifist, man. I'm all about the Karate Kid and all that stuff, which is why I just like, it was so fun to play Hawk, because he's like so like, yeah, America, and like a wrestler almost, you know. And Kevin, I mean, Kevin is like my brother.
Okay. That's funny. Because I know your personality. So I was like, it's going to be one or the other. And
I'm a little more boisterous than Rev is. You know, what was really fun was seeing what Ari did with Rev, because Ari took him to this whole other, like, kind of ADHD, like Napoleon Dynamite weirdness, which is just so hard to pull off, man. Like, I remember like Audrey Haworth, the production designer, and I were like, how we have to get him to have this like really odd look. Like, he needs to be able to stand there and do nothing and you just laugh. And I think we got that. Like, Ari already, you know, he's like a clown. Like, he can just morph in these great, really fun ways. And then coupled with these crazy ass glasses, which are kind of a nod to the Trailer Park Boys, a little, just a hint, you know, and the jumpsuits and stuff, but like his kind of, you know, manic weirdness in comparison to my kind of like blunt kind of stupidity, I thought we could do a really good, like Laurel and Hardy type deal, you know?
I will say it took me a few minutes to recognize Ari with the beard. I'm like, I think that's him. He's got a beard. It really took me a few seconds. I looked up and go, I knew it was him.
Everyone thinks he looks like TJ Miller in the poster. I mean,
no.
I've seriously gotten thousands of comments on Facebook about this. And I'm like, dude, this guy is so much funnier than TJ Miller. And he's like not a jerk, you know? Like, no offense to TJ. He's pretty funny. But like, I, you know, people who have worked with him have clearly publicly outed what kind of work environment he appreciates. And like, we have like a family work environment. We're a bunch of dorks making a nerdy movie. You know, it's very different.
So let's go inside Hawk's tent. Did you bring anything you had lying around the house for that tent? Like, this guy ain't leaving. I know his parents want him to leave that backyard, but I was checking out the tent. He's got a table. I think he has a TV. He not leaving anytime soon.
No, I mean, so Hawk's backstory, like he finally was able to get into the military, right? And I imagine it took him about three tries. He's not a winning candidate by any means, you know. He acts like he is. He didn't do any combat. He guarded a toilet paper warehouse in the middle of nowhere, And he really sincerely thought one of his coworkers, another private, was a vampire. And in Hawk's reality, the guy was a vampire. And he didn't have any weapons. He just pummeled him with this 2x4. And he got court-martialed. He did some time for that. And when he gets out, you know, he went to his like normal parents' house, who are like normal people. And obviously he didn't last very long, and they asked him to leave, but instead of leaving, he just went in the backyard. Which, so he pitched a tent. Like, these are things he probably learned in basic training, right? He pitched a tent. He's got his stakes there just in case. He's got an extension cord and an outdoor shower. He's got like a little TV with a VHS player, lots of rip-outs of nudie magazines, and, you know, I mean, just all of this crazy stuff. And it works for him. I mean, he even goes on a date in the movie, and it works out for him. And, I mean, this girl is not a pushover. I mean, she clearly knew what she was getting into, and, you know, maybe it was a pity thing. I don't know, but...
No, I think she likes him. I think that's kind of stated, because Hawk says, you can be my girlfriend. She goes, like, I date other guys, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, I think she's definitely honest, knows what she likes.
Yeah, and she kind of, so this is the character of Theo. She's a writer who's writing about vampire slaying, and Hawk and Rev meet her early on in the film at this religious supply store. She's working there, basically trying to meet other people who are working in this, you know, the world of the supernatural, so to speak, kind of like in, you know, in Lost Boys with the comic book store and whatnot, right? It's a little nod. And she's, you know, she's your she's great, man. She is a strong woman. She is opinionated. And even though she thinks Hawk and Rev are out of their minds and possibly mentally handicapped a little bit, she still kind of appreciates what they're doing and also finds it quite intriguing and wants to write about it. And somehow Hawk is able to work some kind of charm against her. And I think Hawk bites off more than he can chew there. I mean, he just keeps finding out that she's far more liberated than his little kind of law and order pea brain can understand, which was a fun nod to kind of like update all of the modern ideas about that kind of stuff and added in there, which is like a divergence from the 80s stuff that we keep doing. Cause Hawk's like, you know, he's kind of like a dumb John McClane or something like that. And Theo is a very modern character. You know?
So I want to discuss the origins of Hawk's bike and the stuff he pulls behind him.
And okay.
Hold on.
Hawk is on a lot of stuff, man. He's on a lot of head meds. No one's going to give that guy a license. You know, so when he does finally leave his parents' backyard, so basically for his parents to get him the heck out of there, they just start turning the garden sprinklers on all the time on him. Gets all of his stuff wet. They lock him out of the house. He breaks in. It's this kind of repetitive thing. And they finally set the alarm, so the cops are coming after him. And since he's already gotten in a lot of trouble with the police, and he's constantly crying wolf and calling this poor deputy about werewolves and every such thing, you know, he hits the road, and he's got like his childhood, you know, wagon, and he stuffs all of his stuff in there, including this nice plywood target so that he can throw axes at, which unfortunately that was cut out of the movie, but that was pretty fun. And he carries all of his stuff, and he goes and he lives underneath an overpass, and he pitches a tent next to this homeless accountant named Terry. And they have kind of a fun relationship, and Terry just keeps coming back all the way to the end. And so if we have a part two, he's going to come back as a ghost, darn it.
We're going to get there. Now, how much fun was it to ride the bike down the street and being filmed? Were people honking at you? Were people questioning what you were doing?
Not fun, dude. not fun. People were trying to run me over. People were swearing at me. A guy threw a soda at me. I'm like, what is going on? I mean, you know, it's Los Angeles. When people usually shoot movies here, they lock down the street and they do all of this stuff. We didn't do any of that. You know, that was not in our budget. You know, one day's worth of craft service M&M budget and most of these productions was the entire budget of our movie. Yeah,
I can believe
you know, the falling off the bike, all that stuff, that was me actually doing that.
I figured as much.
Yeah. But I mean, again, I did martial arts for a long time. I played football. I raced BMX. I'm no stranger to getting roughed up. So it's fine. Like, you know, I just did it.
Now, you spend a lot of time on a beach, and I know you're shooting at different days. I'm not criticizing you for that. It's evident with the lighting. I'm not blaming you. It's an independent movie. I can't complain. I wanted to know. I mean, I just thought L.A. was busy. So where did you find this empty beach? Because I never see anybody else on it. It looks like you guys have access to it all day. Or that's just because of when you went.
So, I mean, interestingly, that is one of the few permitted locations we had. And this is a state of California beach, not an LA County beach. So, you know, it's like $50 to get a permit for the full day.
They
do not close down the beach. And it's probably 45 minutes north of LA. So it's a pretty far drive for people who are just going to go for the day. And we went on a Monday. There are, believe it or not, in the original footage, there's a lot of people walking around in the background.
Oh, okay.
And so I spent a good month just digitally removing all of
those. Aha!
With After Effects, which was a really interesting thing. I learned After Effects on Hawk and Rev, which, you know, I've definitely know how to edit, and I'm a big tech guy. I love all that stuff. But I had not used After Effects before, and it is just amazing. I mean, you can just remove people.
My question is, so you're filming. These people are just walking behind you. They don't interrupt you. Wait, what's going on or anything?
I mean, it's just so weird, man. There we are. I'm standing there with basically no clothes on.
Yeah, I know.
And a headband. And let me just say, I'm a pretty fair guy. I got sunburned like you would not believe. Yeah. I look like a lobster by the end of that day. I'm like holding a steak and doing all this stupid stuff. People just walking by, just kind of not even like, you know, we had two small cameras, two guys shooting, a bounce and a sound guy, you know, a little bit of art department, nothing crazy, like five people and you know, us actors. And yeah, they just basically ignored us because we were not, you know, it's LA. They're like, oh, where's Tom Cruise? There's no movie stars here. You know, like, so that's the good thing too, is you can, like, you know, the expectations here are very low if you're not a like a big production.
But see, the funny thing is, if I walked on the beach and saw you, I'd be like, oh my God, I know these guys. I totally would sit and go, I don't give a crap on Tom Cruise. He doesn't talk to me. But these guys do. I'm totally sit and watch it and go, and you're like, do I know you?
I mean, the funny thing is the ranger sat and watched us a long time. We thanked him in the credits because he was laughing his ass off. He was having so much fun. We were feeding him and all this stuff, you know.
Well, that's the way to get the ranger on your side. You feed him, he's like, yeah, I'll stay here for a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, can you stop? They're filming a take. Just wait a second, okay? That's awesome. You have a clown mug that your character seems to like a lot. And you know I'm going to ask you where it came from because it shows up and you're very prevalent in shooting that I'm looking at a clown mug.
So I believe my brother actually got that in Canada. So my younger brother works for a semi-prominent musical artist.
Okay.
And he is a roadie. And he got that in Canada. And I stole it from him for a prop.
I don't think I've ever seen that for sale in Canada. So he must have got it in Calgary.
Yeah. It's a plastic clown cup, and it's plastic meant for hot beverages. I mean, it's just foul, right?
Like, okay.
You must have got it at a truck stop or something weird, you know?
If I see another one, I'll pick it up for you.
Yeah, I love clowns. I mean, my wife will not let me hang any clown-related paraphernalia anywhere in our house, so I have some... We have an outdoor bathroom at my office, and that's we have an outhouse at my office. That's
yeah. I was about to ask that. Was that what you meant?
yeah. It's a weird deal. I don't know what to tell you, man. We let the freak flag fly in this movie. I mean, you can see it. I mean, we've got gimps and goth mans and all kinds of wacky stuff. You know. It's a fun movie. It's like a weirdly ruckus, inclusive, metally, gothy, strange 80s homage horror comedy, you know?
Oh, we're getting there. I got more coming.
Yeah.
The truck design, is that a little bit of Scooby-Doo madness?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Who got to clean up the popcorn? I never did ask that question.
Oh, I mean, you know, when you're the director on a low-budget movie, the buck stops with you.
So, fair enough. You also have old nanny cam dolls. Did you buy them, or is they just sitting around in the prop room?
So those were some Easter bunnies that my mom actually gave to us. And it just I was like, we've got some cameras in here, and we'll try to actually – use it for real and get some footage off of it. We could never get it to actually connect or work. So we just kind of faked our way through that whole thing. But they're based on some nanny cams that a friend of ours had, and they actually caught this babysitter doing some really weird stuff, which is enough for a whole other movie.
Oh yeah.
But
it sounds like, why did you tell me that? I'm like, that's a movie. Don't give that to the improv guys of weird nanny cam footage. He's already written 4 pages just on the thoughts.
There you go. There you go.
So I want to give some homage to the makeup. I quite enjoyed the makeup. I thought it was well done for a low budget film. I thought there was, I know low makeup people seem to be getting better and better and just better techniques. So what did you think of your makeup?
I mean, I think it's damn good for any budget, to be honest. I mean, again, this is a testament to our crew, right? I mean, Audrey Haworth, production designer, David Rickabaugh, art director, they did the makeup, hair, and wardrobe as well, and all the gore. They did that, which is insane. It was the first time they'd done any kind of horror makeup, and they were just totally obsessed with spraying blood. So there's some scenes in the movie where we really spray some blood out of some stuff, and you know they went and got old fire extinguishers that take water that are about 30 gallons that you can pressurize, and we were playing with those filled with blood.
That's how you did it.
Insane, man! They shoot so much blood. And the other thing we had to do is we had to make stuff that could, because we are covered in blood for the last 20 minutes of the movie, which is so funny. They had to make blood that could go in our mouths and our eyes for days on end and not kill us, basically. So they came up with their own concoction that was edible, which was amazing. And then all of that in these fire extinguishers, shooting through props and all this crazy stuff. For quite a lot of that end sequence, I mean, we look wet with blood, and it was a weird cold spell we had in LA. So LA is sunny in 99.9% of the days. It was 25 degrees. So, you know, 30 degrees is freezing. 25 degrees. So they were able to take clothing, our wardrobe that had been soaked in blood, and replicate that in a dry way that still looked soaked with blood. I don't know how the hell they did that. It is some crazy industry secret. And I hope they go on and do that in many movies because it was outrageous. We were literally like, you know, one day when it was warm, we were blasted with blood and soaked for all these shots. And then we had to come back the next week and it was suddenly freezing. And they were like, dude, like, just give us a day and we'll figure this out. And they came up with this whole way to like rubberize the clothing, make it still glossy, the same color, and match on camera. And then we didn't freeze our buns off, you know, because we were there covered in blood for, you know, 8 to 12 hours a day for some of those.
I wanted to ask, how much fun was that blood to work with? It was like friggin' insanity.
Dude, it was an operatic buffet of blood. It was so fun.
I've never seen that much blood.
I mean, I'm a glutton for shooting. I love shooting. I love being on set. I love like doing all the stuff. So for me, I'm like, it's 25 degrees. Who cares? Let's shoot some blood. I was having the best time. The other actors, they were like, dude, like we are freezing. Like, come on, dude. So we got some of these gas. Like, I don't know if you guys probably have them in Canada. They're like you get a propane tank, right? Like that would fit under a barbecue, and it put this attachment. It's got these two big radiators on the front. So we're like putting these out everywhere. I mean, oh my God. But I had so much fun, dude. Great story. After one of the nights, you know, it's probably like 4 a.m. I drive off from the location. The other actors had gotten cleaned up and I was like, ah, I'm just going to take a shower at home. I'm starting to drive home. It's like 45 minutes to get back to the place. And I'm still covered in the blood and I'm in the wardrobe and I'm running out of gas. So I pull over at this gas station at 4 a.m. in the full hawk bloody wardrobe and not even thinking about it, man, because I'd just been living like that. And there I am. It's kind of a nice part of LA. And I'm like pumping gas and I see this woman drive in with this white Lexus. And I'm like, oh, and then I realize I'm covered in blood and I see her just go like, oh, and just drive right out of the gas station. She was like, oh no, I'm not stopping there. Something bad happened there.
That's too funny.
So
you do use a lot of 80s medleys. I find that really hit home. Was that a plan if somebody did not figure out this was based on the 80s or should be the 80s, the medleys should give it away?
Oh yeah. I mean, what you know, there's like, so there's a whole sequence of 80s taglines that Hawk, you know, basically yells at Rev, and Rev's never watched a movie because he's a pacifist hippie dude. So he didn't know any of them, but that's a great indication of how many 80s movies we're homaging here. And one of my favorite things are like these kind of slow-mo scenes where the dudes are all walking. It's like super corny. And like, you know, let's get ready scene, you know, and all of this stuff. We're just trying to play with that and kind of make fun of it, but really have fun with it at the same time. Like not judge it too hard, but also kind of play with that idea. You know, Rev ends up, you know, with his face painted this really obnoxiously bright purple color as if that would work as camouflage, which I thought was hilarious. I mean, I love all of those 80s movies like The Last Boy Scout and, you know, Extreme Prejudice and Cobra and Commando, all these funny things. And I mean, there's a great homage at the end in the beach scene to Predator. Like Hawk tries to give the steak to Rev and he's like, psh! They have this like weird fight. And we were trying to homage that scene between Arnold and, I can't remember his name, Carl something in Predator.
Carl Weathers, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. He's like, Dylan, you son of a bitch. He's like, whoosh. We're like just trying to, that stuff is just all over the movie. If you watch this movie more than once, you will find whole other layers of little weird taglines and stuff that you're like, oh, wait a second. That is from that movie. That is from that thing. I mean, I figured after the first table read, I was like, you know, some of this stuff's just sort of expositional. I'm just going to have fun with this dialogue. And I was like, What does this remind me of? Oh, yeah, it reminds me of Last Boy Scout. I'm going to put that here. What does this remind me of? It reminds me of Die Hard, you know, and I just kept doing that all over the movie because I realized, like, Hawk is not a real tough guy. He's like a pretend tough guy. He lives in his fantasy world. You know, he's a guy, he's a failure to launch guy. He never got kicked out of the nest, really, except to go to the military service where he got in trouble. So really, he's watched a ton of movies, and that's pretty much, you know, his experience in life. So if he's confronted with real vampires or what he thinks are, I mean, what is he going to do? Obviously, it's going to be based on something in a movie. So that kind of led the weird metaverse that we made, you know?
Man, so how much fun was Bird Calls?
Bird Calls was hilarious. That was so funny. And oh my God, man, so many people were like, I don't get this Bird Call thing.
Come on. It's
I was like,
funny.
Dude, this is ridiculous. This is so dumb. Like, you know, and the fact that it ends with a poop joke is just one of my favorite things. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask if this line was ad-libbed or did you actually say it? Die, yuppie scum. That was ad-libbed when a car went by you while riding a bike. Is that a real person?
That is in the script. That is not a real the person driving the minivan. Actually, it's a, you know, quote unquote soccer mom. Yes. That runs Hawk off the road. No, that is a person we knew who was driving their minivan. And they are not a soccer mom. They are a very tall, large, buff man. And if you pause it somewhere, you can kind of see that it's just this giant dude.
Well, I didn't know because I wasn't sure because I know you're filming.
Oh, and it could have been scum.
It could have been that. I also, did you have a flip phone in your stock or did you just, somebody loaned you one?
That is an old flip phone that I had sitting in a bag because I don't know. I'm like a pack rat, like weird, you know, weird props and strange things like that mug. They're just so weird. You got to hold on to them and put them in places. I mean, I've got this, I don't know, you can't see it because it's background, but I've got this giant wooden hay pitchfork that I found. I got to put that in something. It needed to be in Hawk and Rav, but I just didn't do it.
Okay. I'm done with my questions, but I have one left concerning Hawk and Rav. According to IMDb, there's a Hawk and Rav 2 coming.
Yep. There is. I'm writing it right now. I'm also writing a part 3.
Oh.
I figure we're just going to go for it. I'm in the process of finishing another movie I shot before that.
So hold on. Where does this one fall into the thing?
So there's another movie called Listen Carefully that I'm doing post on right now and trying to get that thing finished and out to festivals. And then this gargantuan mountain of Hawk and Rav 2 and 3, I think will start to be the next thing that I'm going to do. And it's where we're going to, there's a whole, so at the end of Hawk and Rav Vampire Slayers, there's a bit of a twist and I'm not going to give it away. But there's a slight, you know, supernatural implication with one of the main characters. And in part 2, a similar thing is going to happen with a different kind of thing, a werewolf. And so in part 3, they are going to turn into their respective supernatural selves to battle demons and save the world.
Okay. So, now, I don't know if you remember, I do like to ask fun questions that have nothing to do with your film at the end of interviews.
But
you've already forgotten.
Of course.
So I know you've forgotten them, but it's all right. I made up new ones for you. Your favorite version of Dracula?
My favorite version of Dracula. I gotta go with you know what? I really like Adam Sandler's version in that animated movie. I think that thing is hilarious.
My brain is blanking, and there's a fourth one out this year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I know the one you're talking about.
I like the Gary Oldman thing, right? Wasn't he like interviewing a vampire? That's pretty good.
No, he's Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I mean, but they're never like, I really like what they did with the vampires and What We Do in the Shadows. I thought that was.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Hysterical. Oh my God. So funny.
Underrated movie that nobody's seen.
Super underrated. Like, I mean, God, I'm glad they made it into a series, but that movie, my God, that movie is funny.
I think that's the funniest scene when the bitches about the guy not cleaning up after he trained somebody. I was dying. I'm like, you guys got me. I'm in.
So good. It's so good.
Your favorite comedy?
My favorite comedy of all time. Wow. I mean, that's a tough one, dude. Wow. I'm a big Monty Python fan.
That's fine.
So the Holy Grail is pretty, it's like, you know, probably half the time it's my favorite one. And that whole Black Knight death scene is amazing. And we definitely rip that off with the Terry thing. Right.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Your last one's really easy. What actor you would love to have in your films?
Oh, Bruce Campbell.
Oh, you can get him, though. I'm sure you can.
I don't know, man.
Have you asked him? It would be my first question.
I have not asked him.
Then why don't you?
I mean, so part of the plan for part two and part three is to get really fun kind of 80s horror stars, you know? And well, get
Corey
them
Feldman's
in there.
Got to work cheap. I hope he doesn't listen to this, but I mean, I love Corey Feldman, but he hasn't been doing much lately. I mean, he did have a band, but I don't think they went anywhere.
Yeah, I spoke to the other Frog Brother.
Yes.
While we were doing post, because there's a personal connection to him through somebody, and you know, it was interesting. We almost went and did another pickup scene in an alley where he kind of shows up as like, you know, I don't know if you've seen, what the heck is the name of that the series with, the Karate Kid, reboot series on
Cobra Kai. Of course. I've been watching this since YouTube. I'm not one of these Netflix people. YouTube right here.
Exactly. So remember at the end of the first season, where the old Cobra Kai sensei comes back.
Oh, right at the end. It's like the last shot of the thing.
All backlit. Like,
you know, so good.
So good. And so we thought about doing something like that with him. And he was like, dude, unless you get Corey, no one's going to remember who the hell I am. Because I don't have any hair now. And, you know, it's 40 years later. And I was like, yeah. So, but I mean, in my fantasy, we get a bunch of these kind of like the Expendables, but of horror, and maybe some action as well. And also I really want to get, some film critics and like, you know, and have them, you know, if they want to be in some of the death scenes, I thought that could be super fun as well.
If I'm around and I'm there, you feel free to kill me. You can have me now before go ahead.
No, I'm just saying like we made the movie like I, after trying, look, after making a comedy about homophobia, a drama about stolen valor, going out there and pitching projects in Hollywood land for years during that whole time, not getting, you know, the time of day from anybody. I was like, I just want to make thing that is really fun to me, so that all of the time that I spend on the post-production and all that stuff, the script, it's just fun for me, so that if nothing happens with this movie, I will have been like, I had a great time making this thing with my friends for the last 4 years. So, and I think that's really reflected in the movie. And when you read, like, I don't know, like a lot of the reviews from professional reviewers, but also from just viewers who have gone to the trouble to write about it, you know, on the platforms and whatnot, that's the thing they get. Like, we literally are not taking ourselves seriously. We're really trying to have a fun time and make it kind of contagious. You know, I was a really big fan of Cheech and Chong movies when I was a kid. You know, I was too young to actually partake in any kind of thing like that, but I thought they were hilarious, and they have like this cult following. So maybe we can get some of these older actors to do a similar thing and not take themselves so seriously and just kind of, you know, go out there and get killed in a really dumb way, or, you know, slap Hawk around or something. You know?
Okay. Before I let you go, you have two other films I know of, and you can tell them where to find them and tell them where they can find you, and good time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you can find all the information you need in the world about Hawk and Rev and Rev.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff, Twitter. I'm at Ryan Barton Grimley, on, Instagram and, you know, every service. And I have a website and a production website for RBG Films. Right now I'm in post on Listen Carefully, which is kind of a really, so it's like Jacob's Ladder for new parents. So it's a corrupt assistant bank manager dad who's left with his 3-month-old daughter for the first time while his wife goes out with her girlfriends, and someone takes his baby and starts trying to extort money from him. And it's this kind of like paranoid fever dream over one night to get his baby back and communicating with these people through this owl shaped baby monitor. It's hilarious. It's like way darker comedy. So it's more like Funny Games, but funnier and weirder. So that thing hopefully will be out on the festival circuit by the end of the year. And then after that, it's going to be Hawk and Rev 2, Werewolf Slayers, and then Hawk and Rev 3, Demon Slayers. And if I can squeeze it in, I'm going to try to make a movie called Alt-Right, which is about a right-wing talk show pundit who quits his job and starts getting stalked by one of his fans. And it's a horror cool. comedy, kind of like The Burbs, like, really funny, kind of deals with a little political stuff, but from both angles and makes fun of it in a really great kind of way, and is super fun. And I don't know when the heck we're going to get to do all this stuff, but that's the plan over the, 22 and 23 will be to do all of that work and get those things out there. Because people like Hawk and Rev, man, like, it's crazy. I finished this movie at the very beginning of COVID, finished the post, went out to festivals. We'd already been going out for 2 years while we were doing pickups. We're able to premiere digitally through COVID. We played Dances with Films in LA, which is the largest actual independent film festival in the United States, where they don't show studio movies. They're actual independent movies. We're the midnight screening movie on opening and closing night for that. That was the first time they had done a midnight section. We did Fantaspoa in Brazil. We did Terra Mullins in Spain. I mean, we played some really big horror festivals because we're the only comedy out there in the horror genre. And it's a fun movie, dude. Like, if you just want to turn your brain off and be like, yeah, the world is a super serious place with, you know, viruses and politics and all this BS. Yes, that is true. And it is serious. And also, you can also take a break from it and have some enjoyment and laugh, because laughter is such a great antidote, and you can reconnect with people and watch this thing. It's a fun movie. It's basically PG-13. So you can watch it with, you know, preteens. There's nothing that crazy or suggestive in there. And it just kind of makes fun of everything and doesn't take itself so seriously. And I think you'll have a great time. That's my pitch, man. That's all I got.
Okay, people, go out and check out all those films. Thank you for your time, Ryan. Have a great night.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.